Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Some well-known Boston restaurants shut their doors in just the past few weeks. The renowned Back Bay French restaurant L'Espalier closed its doors last month after 40 years in business. It put everything related to its restaurant business up for sale, from the dishwashers to the wine glasses.
The champagne preservation system. How much for it?
$25.
I got 37 and a half.
That's an auction of L'Espalier's equipment. Now, L'Espalier is just one in a series of Boston food institutions to close recently. Durgan Park, the old school New England dining establishment, served its last meals just about a week and a half ago. Joining us to talk about the Boston food scene and how it's changing is Boston Globe food writer and restaurant critic Deborah First. She joins us via Skype. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So restaurants are always closing. And I know L'Espalier and Durgan Park, we're talking about two very different entities here. But is there a connection between these closings?
Well, I think, yes, as you say, restaurants are always closing. And one reason I think that it feels like a lot suddenly is that places we know and possibly love are closing at once. So it's a bunch of very visible closings. But I'm not sure in terms of numbers that it's necessarily more than usual. And places continue to open apace. So though I think the opening rate is a little lower than it may have been in the past. So we'll note that. But the connection, I think, between L'Espalier and Durgan Park, on the surface, you really couldn't imagine two more different restaurants, both of which sort of represent a certain side of Boston dining. But I think that taken together, they're sort of an interesting two-pronged illustration of what we really value in dining, one of which is the food has to be really wonderful. And I think that L'Espalier did that extremely consistently for so many years. And then one of which is sort of how much the place and the setting matter to us, which, you know, Durgan Park, I think the thing it was famous for was its bad service. And I think its service was actually absolutely the best thing about it. Right. You know, the setting and the service, where L'Espalier used to sort of operate in this, you know, very romantic little brownstone. And once it moved, I think for a lot of diners, it lost its luster. So every restaurant that closes really closes for its own different reasons. I think every restaurant closing is very different, though there may be some commonalities between them.
Yeah, but I just wonder, though, you know, what does it say about changing tastes? Because, you know, there are certainly places in Boston right now where you can't get a table. You can't make a reservation. I'm thinking of maybe like, or even greater Boston, say, let's extend it. Julian, Cambridge, Sarma, Salty Girl. These are places you can't get near. So why is everyone flocking to those? Does it say something about where we are in terms of our tastes in food?
Certainly tastes have changed. I think, you know, for Durgan Park, you know, the food maybe wasn't at its very best toward the end, and people had sort of stopped going there. If you lived in Boston, Durgan Park became a little bit of a punchline toward the end. It was, you know, viewed as a tourist restaurant, and it was certainly not what people were looking for here. I think I talked to one of the guys who operated it, and he said, you know, if two young people are looking for a place to go on a date, they're not going to say, hey, let's go to Durgan Park, you know.
Right.
And, you know, L'Espalier, I think, it, you know, obviously we are moving away from sort of a classical version of fine dining. People are less interested in making the commitment of time and finances to a meal involving white tablecloths and, you know, formal service, expensive wine, and, you know, 12 courses of a tasting menu that toward the end when you leave, maybe you don't actually feel particularly well after eating all that food. And I think, you know, people talk a lot about millennials and their changing tastes, and research does bear that out to a degree. You know, they eat out more, but they want to eat quicker, you know, faster, different kinds of things, and not those long tasting menus. But also, I think, you know, millennials are really coming of age in an extremely uncertain time, and maybe people aren't going to fine dining because fine dining is really expensive and we don't feel very confident that we're going to have that money next month to pay our rent. I mean, I just listened to your previous segment. So, you know, I think that's the climate that we live in now.
Right, right. But what are the new hot restaurants saying? Well, you don't have to name them, but, you know, when you look at some of these places, I mean, they're expensive too, right? These places
right.
that you can't get into. So they cost a lot. Some of them are fine dining. I mean, is it, I just wonder what that says about, oh, just briefly, because we're going to run out of time. What do you think it says about how tastes have changed?
Well, on the one hand, I think it's optics that to commit to something that feels very fancy and expensive is maybe something you don't want to do, even if you're spending the same amount ultimately. It just doesn't feel the same way. But also, yes, we are looking to eat more casually, to have more fun, to share small plates. A lot of places are opening without the intention of staying open for long periods of time. You know, they have business plans that are finite. And, you know, we are an Instagram culture. We want the new, on to the next. And so it is much harder to stay in business for a long period of time in that environment.
Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, in terms of Boston as a food city, why is it that, you know, other places, especially Portland, Maine, why do they get all the attention?
Boston is in a bit of a funny middle ground where, you know, it's sort of expected to perform at the level of a larger city like New York. But, you know, it's actually not that large. It's sort of comparable to Detroit. But whereas people are excited about the Detroit dining scene, which is like on the rise, you know, Boston's been here and it's sort of expected to have a certain level of excellence where a place like Portland feels newer, younger, scrappier, more exciting. And there are a whole lot of reasons for that. A lot of which have to do with economics and where young people with out of the box ideas can afford to open restaurants.
Okay.
You look at Providence too.
Right. I know you probably hate this question and we have like 30 seconds left, so I'm really putting you on the spot, but give me like a new favorite restaurant in Boston. Can you give me one?
Oh goodness. Well, I think in Union Square, there's a place called Celeste.
Yeah.
It's a very small Peruvian restaurant that I think illustrates a lot of the things people are looking for in dining right now. Tiny, very personal, kind of operates more like an art project. We got to go.
Boston Globe food writer and restaurant critic Deborah First, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.